Good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday, February 9th meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them. And for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all the items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event that that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, will you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney.
Present.
Representative Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Precia.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Daymuth.
Present.
Representative Dravkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Jordan, present.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Schoen.
Present.
Representative Joaquin.
Present.
We have 17 members present, and that there is quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from yesterday's meeting, Tuesday, February 8th? And if so, would you like to move approval of those same minutes?
I have reviewed the minutes, Mr. Chair, and so moved.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Jordan motion? Seeing none, members, if you would please unmute. This is a voice vote. All those in favor of approving the minutes from Tuesday, February 8th, the Jordan motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Members, today we'll be discussing some of the cost drivers that relate to delivering special education services to students in Minnesota. And we plan to lay over two bills that relate to that topic, House File 2657 and House File 2751. First, to help give the public and the committee a grounding in the current statewide costs relating to special education, the Minnesota Department of Education is here for a brief presentation. Mr. Farron, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. My name is Paul Farron. I am the Special Education Funding and Data Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Education. I believe I provided this fun-loving PowerPoint presentation. Can we skip to the next slide? So basically, this is just a kind of quick overview of where we were at based on the November 2021 forecast for special education. This first graph shows total statewide expenditures along with then the corresponding statewide revenues for offsetting said expenditures. Next slide. This slide shows then the total cross subsidy in millions of dollars. So the unfunded cost that, gets bared on school districts and charter schools for their, unreimbursed share of what the formula doesn't cover. And also, what the tuition billing piece of it also went to just out or hold harmless to help offset. Next slide. And on this one, we then break it down to the individual cross subsidies over the last, 23 years based on a ADM piece itself that kind of just shows this up and down. We've held fairly steady for the last few years, but we did see a dip in 2019. And it has, with the advent of the cross subsidy aid piece that was first started in to hold the cross subsidy at the $807 range of 2019. But that kind of grew for the 2 years of 2020-2021 to 6.43%, but hasn't grown anymore, and therefore we'll gradually be seeing the cross-subsidy increase over the later years. And then next slide, thank you. Sorry, stay on this one. This kind of now shows, based on the stratus for the across the state for education funding, what the total special education expenditures are, the corresponding just special ed ADMs that are being served, and then the average spend with a minimum maximum. Obviously, with St. Paul, Minneapolis, it's pretty easy for strata one, because since there's only two LEAs in there, to kind of figure out which one's your minimum, which one's your maximum for showing how close. And then, but obviously, as you get out with most of the outer districts, there can be quite a few numbers of inner city, metro, and outer city, more rural school districts that make up this. And while the average might be, you know, $15,000, $16,000, obviously there is a fairly large fluctuation between the lowest spending and the highest spending. I do have one number put in red font for the non-metro less than 1,000 in strata six as being the high for the districts at 27,000. I made a note, this is Prinsburg, which is them and Franconia are the two unique school districts in the state where they don't actually have a public school located within their district. Prinsburg is slightly different than Franconia, whereby they do have a non-public. And so the only real students that Prinsburg gets to show for ADMs are a few early childhood kids and then the few shared time kids that they're serving by through the non-public. And so given they're having to staff more and provide additional services that, you know, might be better spread out in most regular districts, that's what causes Prinsburg to always look as like this high spend, you know, on average compared to other school districts. And then obviously we can see where charter schools and the co-ops have much more significant fluctuation between their low spend and highest average spend per, you know, student. Next slide. So now a big question that we always kind of get is that the comparison between charter schools and the districts isn't fair when you separate out the co-ops and intermediates. And so what this does is now I'm allocating back all of the costs from the co-ops and intermediates back to the students' resident districts, and I'm adding in those ADMs that are served in the co-ops, intermediates, back to the resident districts itself to then show what the average spend minimum maximum would be, putting all of those costs back to their resident districts, again, by strata. So it has a slight tweak in there for all of those. And again, obviously the charter schools wouldn't change because they have no resident kids that are served at, you know, they have no resident kids. We can see in here that, you know, looking at this from a separate point, there's 47 charter schools, not including Prinsburg's district, but there's 47 charter schools before you get to the very first district on average spend. So basically, district number, LEA number 49 is Fridley Public Schools at around that 22,600 mark. Other than that, it's, you know, 47 charter schools are ahead of them in average spend, of which those 47 average out at $33,200 a student. Next slide. So can we get these, there's a few things for how like billing specifically works for charter schools. Charter schools are able to tuition bill currently 80% of their unreimbursed costs back to the resident school district. It used to be 90%. That was set in law back in 2015. And then starting in 2020, we reduced from 90 to 85. And now in 2021 and now later years, it's down to 80%. We do subsidize the what was 5% loss and 10% loss. So basically charters are still held at that 90%. But school districts and all other like open enrollment type records, they are only tuition billed back to the resident at 80%. We then have a few caveats specific to charter schools, whereby if a charter school's population is more than 30% special education, they qualify for the ability to appeal general education costs. This basically comes to play if their total general education spend is greater than their total general education intake of revenue. If that's the case, we will, you know, find the unreimbursed amount, divide it by all kids served, and bill back that amount just to the shared to just the special ed kids. This generally can't happen ongoing forever because basically you'd be running at a loss every year for the general education kids, and you know a charter school wouldn't be able to survive doing that. So we do see a few, every other year, every few years, maybe they might qualify for this. In total, there's probably about 25 charter schools that are above that 30% ratio, and we get about 18, 19 of them that are applying for this every year, with then usually only about, one, two, three of them actually qualifying for it. The next caveat comes in at, the next caveat comes in at the 70% marker. If you have more than 70% of your population being special education in a charter school, that exempts you from the 80% tuition billing and allows you to bill 100% of your unreimbursed special ed costs. You also still get to continue with that 30% rule, kind of continues for the general education appeal. And then the last is if you are over 90% special ed, we only have three of those in the state. That enables you to tuition bill even the general education students, their unreimbursed costs for any general education. So basically it allows you to fully cover anything that you would ever spend and do. Next slide. This basically kind of just summarizes, for fiscal year 20, since that's our most recent where everything is final data that shows how much money districts tuition billed back for serving non-resident district kids, what the average spend is or what they were billing back to those resident schools, districts, what charters were, being at around 7,080, and then the average student served at a co-op intermediate. A lot of times I'll just use the word co-op rather than also having to say intermediate education district, region, service, co-op. They're all pretty much are formed under a joint powers arrangement, which comes in at the 27,400 in this case. Next slide. As I did say before, we do have three special ed charters that are over 90% special ed: MetroDef, Sparrow, and Lionsgate Academies. These three charters accounted for 14.7 million or almost 14.8 million of the total billed by charter schools. In fiscal year 20, they served a small portion of the actual special ed students. And so their average amount being billed back to resident districts in 2020 was $27,680. So basically those three were higher than the average of what was being billed back from any and all the intermediates, co-ops, and all the other entities. And I believe that's the end for this slide itself, or my PowerPoint presentation. Although I know I was also asked to provide a couple of I'm sure PDFs, but spreadsheets kind of formats of aid versus kind of cross subsidy, and then a 2022 district kind of summary report. And I don't know if those got up or posted in or.
Mr. Farron, those documents were provided to committee members. So if you could help us understand them, that would be appreciated. And Representative Erickson, I see your hand up. I'd like to give Mr. Farron the chance to complete his presentation, then go to member questions. Thank you.
Yeah.
So Mr. Farron.
Yes. Thank you. I will just pull up on mine. So you were all given then a forecast that basically showed a comparison of 2013 through 2025, which it would have started out with special education program costs. It would reduce out or take back out anything that was non-special education. Generally, we have two definitions for special education cross subsidy in the state. The main one, which also is what drives the legislative report that is produced every year, looks at just the cost of special education and the corresponding aids. Yes, this sheet. And while the formula includes in programs like ADSIS, your alternative delivery of specialized instruction, which is for kids who are at risk of getting an IEP but don't have an IEP. So we back out those costs. And same with, we have built into the formula care and treatment, homeless, and 504 plan transportation costs. Those also are not related to special education services. So we also have to back out those costs. And so that kind of just shows in there as to what, the last 12, 13 years have now looked like. On the spending side, where our average increase in costs have gone, obviously fiscal year 21, we saw a reduction in spending due to pandemic, due to lower staffing, lower transportation costs, kind of come through, and then seeing where, you know, outer years are now going back to our forecasted to bounce back to what we've been more realistically seeing for increases in spending. On the aid side, again, we have the same thing where we're starting with the total appropriation itself and then deducting out any aid that's attributed to the ADCESS program and to the non-transportation. We're also adding in the MA billing revenue that school districts receive, which has gradually gone up, although in recent years has kind of now been held more steady in the mid $50 million range. The federal aid is just basically a money in, money out. As you know, you can see on the expenditures and just revenue side. So while actual uses of schools and how they fluctuate money from one year to the next can change, it still is always going to be in expenditures are always going to be 100% accounted for on the revenue side. Going back to like the original PowerPoint on the first slide, the expenditures piece would tie out with that very first slide graph for the expenditures. The revenues on there would also include both the total state special ed aid line, along with there is the general education to defray line, which is three numbers below when looking at that cross subsidy, that first report of showing total expenditures plus total revenue. Since it is a general education and it's kind of deemed off, it always ends up getting put. We have gross cross subsidy as the first number, in this case at $937 million at the far right for fiscal year 25. And then the $123 million is the amount of general education revenue that was received for students, you know, where the students are spending the majority of their time in the special education classroom. State law says over 60%. This is the instructional amount of that revenue earned while the kid was in special education. The next number down, that $813 million, is your net cross subsidy. So that's the unfunded, unreimbursed amount that the school districts across the state are having to absorb. And then after that, we kind of pull in the overall adjusted ADMs to come out with a cross subsidy per pupil ADM. And then at the very bottom, we have the what the shortfall is for the federal government had they provided the 40% and what the corresponding amount would be back to the state if that would have to be provided in addition to fully fund special education. We can definitely see this number has gone down significantly, and much of that has been attributed to the nationwide average in general education spending over the last, from 13 to like fiscal year 18, which therefore sets that 40% at a higher threshold. And then the other document that was provided is just a fiscal year 22. Again, this is based on the November forecast. So expenditures for 21 were not yet final, nor would tuition billing or any data for 22 be final. So this is basically best estimates. It's going to show the adjusted weighted pupil units along with the state special ed aid formula in that second column that's totaling the $1,809,000,000. The additional one-time cross-subsidy aid that came out of last legislative session, the projected total special education spending, which is the $2,721,000, which is both program, teacher, staff, along with transportation costs. ADCESS, everything would be built into this piece of it. The general education to defray, so that whole students served outside of the outside of their regular classroom more than 60% of the time, and the attributing general education revenue, an adjusted net cross subsidy. Again, this cross subsidy is going to be different than the one discussed on the previous report that's looked only at special education. This one, the formula has the ADCESS and has the care and treatment transportation and homeless transportation built in. So it's basically just an overall unfunded amount. And then again, the cross subsidy per weighted ADM. And I believe that is all I have for today for presenting on. If anyone has any questions, always here to help.
Thank you for that, Mr. Farron. That may be all, but it certainly was also a lot for the committee to take in. So thank you for that. We do have at least one member with a question. Representative Erickson, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Farron, for that very thorough report. We really needed to hear all of this because special education costs are really rising and our districts are spending a lot in the cost subsidy. I'm not sure you're the person to ask from the department, but the 2013 legislative audit report that was done noted that the department should look at cost drivers. And I know the chair said we might be discussing that today, but has the department looked at or worked with districts to find some of their cost drivers to reduce costs? And the other legislative recommendation was updating our education, special education rules to be consistent with our statutes. So can you address either of those, or do I probably need to wait to hear from Adil Shoni?
Mr. Farron?
Representative Erickson, Representative Devine, that's probably not my area to be able to speak on, as that's probably more of a program side itself, or compliance and assistance side, or assistance and compliance. Mine just the funding of where the numbers kind of land out is what I can speak to.
Mr. Ooney, I heard your name mentioned.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Adil Shoni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. Representative Erickson, that's a good question. I will go back, as Mr. Farron mentioned, I'll go back to the program staff and see what we can provide if you're able for the committee and the work since 2013.
Thank you, Mr. Ooney. Representative Erickson, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That will be adequate.
Thank you. Representative Yuki, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more of a question. I'm not sure who can answer this. I'm familiar with intermediate districts and the cooperatives that are formed, and that folks from the traditional public schools are on their boards, and there's a lot of control over the billing and discussion back and forth, where it's not so much with charter schools. I'm also familiar with most intermediates serve Fed level setting 4 and above, and things that the area school might not be able to do. What my question is, with the three that you mentioned on slide 9, I know Metro Deaf has a population that's unique and has unique services that are provided, but Sparrow Academy and Lionsgate Academy, are they similar to cooperatives where it's level 4 setting or above, or is this just happenstance? I'm just wondering what the populations look like in those buildings to get a better idea of why the costs are so different.
Mr. Farron?
Representative Erickson, both Sparrow and Metro Deaf generally specialize in autism services as their primary disability that they're serving. Sparrow usually hovers around 91% of their students having an IEP, with the majority having the primary disability be autism. Lionsgate's usually been around 96%. Minnesota state law under 124E says that a charter school has to be open to all students. And so they do get the occasional instance where a general education sibling goes to the school with, which is kind of then where we do see a few of those general ed students kind of pop in there. In the case of Metro Deaf, we're probably looking at around 55 to low 60% of the kids are actually placed by local school districts outside of St. Paul to provide those services. Whereas Lionsgate Sparrow, it's 100% open enrollment. No districts placing kids into there, which is kind of that main difference that you get with the intermediates and service co-ops, where they have their board members and member districts, and the programs are designed just for their members, and they're making the placements into them. So with these, it's with Sparrow and Lionsgate, it's strictly an open enrollment situation.
Representative Yuki?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Farron. That helps clear up a little bit of very complicated complicated discussion we'll be having. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions from members, Mr. Farron, thank you very much for your time and your insight today.
Thank you.
Mr. Strom, I believe you also provided the committee with a document. Would you be so good as to review that for the committee at this time?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a one-page description of special education revenue and a very brief summary of the work that Mr. Farron presented, as well as a brief breakdown of the children who are currently served by special education services in your packets. The school finance guidebook has a much more detailed discussion of special education funding and also has a much more detailed breakdown of each of the categories of disability that Minnesota recognizes. And we've got spreadsheets on that information as well if people would like to see the change over time by disability category. Then there's also a bill summary in your packet for each of the two bills that you'll be hearing next.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Members, that was all intended this first half hour of the committee to establish a context for us for understanding Representative Wolgamott's and Representative Youakim's bills that will be our next bit of work for the day. So Representative Wolgamott, would you like to move, since you're a member of this committee, House File 2657 to be before the committee to lay over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. With that, Representative Wolgamott, members of the committee and the public, we're looking to take action on this bill by approximately 11:20. So we've got about 20 minutes for your testifiers and yourself, Representative Wolgamott. Please proceed with introducing your bill, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am here before you this morning to present House File 2657, which is a bill to fully fund Minnesota's special education cross-subsidy. Mr. Chair, there are so many reasons why I am proud to be a St. Cloud School District 742 parent. One of those reasons is that we are a leader in our region and in our state in providing special education services to students with special needs. I'm proud of our school district for the opportunities they provide for special education students. I'm proud of our special education educators who, you know, pour their heart and soul into their jobs. And most important, Mr. Chair, I'm so proud of our special education students and their families and just the joy that they bring to our schools and the opportunities that they bring for our community's future workforce. I'm proud that our school districts do this. It's the right thing to do to provide good special education services. But also, as we just heard, Minnesota requires that our school districts provide special education services. You know, again, this is the right thing to do. These services are critical to our students with special needs to help them reach their full potential. But unfortunately, Mr. Chair and members, as we saw in the presentation this morning, Minnesota has never fully funded this mandate. And this is a real problem for our students and for our state, for our workforce. Special education needs are rising rapidly, yet the funding shortfall keeps on growing. We're seeing more students that have increasing needs, which again, I'm so proud that our school district is there to fulfill those needs. But because of that, it's leading to greater expenses. In fact, Mr. Chair, as you have in documents before you, it's been projected by MDE that our shortfall for fiscal year 2023 will be $744 million. And in my school district in St. Cloud, that shortfall is going to be $11 million. And for those members who are curious about what the shortfall will be in your districts, we have provided those numbers to you in a handout. And unfortunately, to make up for that difference, as we've heard, our schools are forced to shift general classroom funds to subsidize those special education expenses. And that, as we've heard, is what's referred to as the special education cross subsidy. So we're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, and pitting students against each other for funding. It's just not the right way to do this. We need to do better as a state, and all of our students deserve to have their education fully funded. So that's why, Mr. Chair and members, I'm presenting House File 2657 to fully fund this special education cross-subsidy. The bill itself is very straightforward, as you can see on line 1.2, instead of giving cross subsidy aid factor equal to 6.43%, we're going to give an aid factor of 100%. Instead of just passing the 94% of the buck onto our school districts, we're going to step up, we're going to put our money where our mandates are, and we're going to fund 100% of the special education cross subsidy. And I know what some of my friends on the other side of the aisle might be thinking, that, you know, this projected cost of $744 million is expensive. Well, to that I say, you're right, it is expensive. Just ask the schools who are being forced to take on these costs that we're mandating on them. Just ask the teachers and the students who are missing out on opportunities because we are unfunding, we are not funding these expensive mandates. And Minnesotans are paying for this one way or another. We're either paying for it by denying our children opportunities, or our school districts are forced to pay for it by shifting the burden of these costs onto their local taxpayers, onto seniors, onto people who are living in their homes and living in the neighborhoods. Mr. Chair and members, this is not the right way to fund our education system. This is not the right way to make sure our students have opportunities they need to succeed. So that's why I'm putting this bill forward. There's plenty more to say about this, but I do want to have time for, I've got a great list of testifiers who are experts on this issue that I'm excited to have the chance to share with you today. But again, members, thank you for your consideration for this and for listening to these testifiers. We have got to fully fund this special education cross subsidy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Dabney, you're muted.
My apologies. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Looking at the testifier list, the first testifier I have up is Mr. Bruce Hentages, a former St. Cloud School Board member. Mr. Hentages, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I think I'm unmuted. Thank you, Chair Dabney, and to you and honorable committee members. I'm very proud to be here today. As Representative Wolgamott mentioned, my name is Bruce Hentages. I'm here today representing the citizens of the St. Cloud Area School District 742 to talk briefly about the special education cross subsidy from the perspective of the impact that it has on education in the St. Cloud School District, and to ask for your support of House File 2657 as introduced by Representative Wolgamott and others to eliminate the special education cross subsidy. I am a constituent of Representative Wolgamott, a former career educator in St. Cloud, a former two-term member of the St. Cloud School Board, and for the past 14 years, I've been the executive director of our St. Cloud Education Foundation. In all these roles, I have seen the impact that a lack of funding on regular educational programming has on our students. This lack of appropriate funding is, of course, what drives our education foundation to provide grants in support of our academic activities, arts, and athletic programs in District 742. As you may know, St. Cloud has changed demographically over recent years, with nearly 60% of our students now receiving free and reduced lunch, 19% receiving special education services, and 24% qualifying for English language learner services. As a school board member, I presented to this committee in 2018 on this same cross-subsidy issue. At that time, the cross subsidy in St. Cloud was just under $15 million. That means that nearly $15 million was unavailable for programming for our regular education students. I applaud the limited progress that has been made in recent years through the cross subsidy aid and removal of the cap on special education funding. However, St. Cloud currently carries, according to data presented this morning, by the way, $12,600,000. In cross-subsidy expenditure. We have the 12th highest cross-subsidy in Minnesota, and of those 12 districts, we have the sixth highest cross-subsidy per student. In St. Cloud, that means there will be $1,223 less funding available per student for the many educational interventions that could make the difference in a student's educational life and career. As you well know, the special education cross-subsidy has been at a crisis point for many districts in Minnesota for many years. The implications for education in our school district are significant, but you have all heard such stories from your own school district constituents. I don't think there's a bigger positive impact you could have on education in Minnesota than eliminating the special education cross subsidy. I don't think there has ever been a better time to take this gigantic step than now, while our state has the large budget surplus. I realize it would be a big step, but I am reminded of a famous American's quote, if not us, who, if not now, when? We would be grateful to you for your support of Representative Wolgamott's bill to eliminate the special education cross subsidy and allow us to better serve the needs of all students in the St. Cloud School District and across Minnesota. We ask for your support of House File 2657, and we thank Representative Wolgamott and the other sponsors of this bill for their support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hentges. Next on the list of testifiers is Amy Scalarud, Executive Director of Finance and Business Services for the St. Cloud Area Schools. Ms. Scalarud, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and committee members. My name is Amy Scalarud. I am the Executive Director of Finance and Business Services for St. Cloud Area School District 742, and I'm also a district resident and parent of a 742 student. I have been with the district since 2010 and have been in my current position since 2017, at which time the district had to make $4 million in budget reductions, largely due to the change in the special education funding formula that happened at that time. This resulted in significant reductions in regular education programming that negatively impacted our students, and our district continues to be negatively impacted by the special education cross subsidy. Currently, our special education programming is projected to be underfunded by approximately $12.6 million. Eliminating the cross subsidy would provide the funding needed to support educational programming that is critical to our students. Adequate funding would allow our district to add and expand programs and supports for all of our students, including expanding co-teaching, providing services for students with dyslexia, increasing preschool offerings to serve more students, expanding career and technical program offerings, providing additional staffing and resources for our English learners, expanding programs to better meet the needs of gifted and talented students, increasing counseling, social, emotional, and mental health supports, expanding fine arts offerings, and increasing professional development for all staff. We are very fortunate in District 742 that we have received federal COVID relief funds, which has given us the opportunity to provide some of these important programs and supports for our students. However, those funds are temporary, and therefore the programs and positions that we have added will all have to be reduced or eliminated in 2 years when these funds are gone. As Mr. Hinch has stated, now is the time to finally address this issue with the state's budget surplus. Please support House File 2657 so we can finally eliminate the special education cross subsidy and provide these programs and supports that our students deserve.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Scalarud. Next on the list is Superintendent Christine Tucci Osorio from the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale Schools. Superintendent, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. My name is Christine Tucci Osorio, and I'm the superintendent for District 622, which is North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale. We are a school district of just under 11,000 students with a special ed population of about 18% of that and an EL population close to 15 to 16% of that population. I want to thank the members of the committee for taking time to hear these testimonies today. I know that we talk every year at the legislature about this special education cross subsidy, kind of throw that term around a lot, but I want to really start by reminding everybody that our special education students are also our general education students. They get and receive general ed services, but these are additional services on top of that. Something that we have to remember is the true value of special education services and early intervention in our children. And I'd like to just take a moment to reflect with you on a couple of my own family members. My mother's younger sister, Anita was her name, born in the 40s, severely autistic, although was not diagnosed as such. Her quality of life did not benefit from the incredible special education services that we have today. Brilliant woman, incredibly fluent in two languages, English and Spanish, played the piano, never was able to be a contributing member of society in terms of job, live on her own, was never able to have an independent life whatsoever. She has since passed away. By contrast, I have a stepdaughter who did benefit, also with autism, benefited from an incredible programming, early intervention. And if you think about what the impact is on children and how that affects their lives, but not just their livelihood, but the economy of our state, when we help our students grow up to learn how to advocate for themselves, articulate their needs and have their needs met, and be able to work on really specific and targeted skills, right? So we know that students have all kind of medical and behavioral and speech and language needs that come through special education and different diagnoses, but early intervention has an incredible, incredible impact on a child's life. And I want to just remind us all of why it is so important. And it's so unfortunate that we tend to pit the needs of special education programming against general education programming and all the other things that come in education systems. So I want to just start with that. And I want to just share that in terms of this special education cross subsidy, I know we've heard about it a lot, but it's so important that we provide good services for our students. And I want to also remind everybody that all of us are working hard because of this cross subsidy to make sure we're containing costs, not just spending freely. We're constantly evaluating caseloads. We're looking at, are there different ways we can deliver services? We're making sure that we continually look at when we can reduce intensity of services when students are developing independent skills and such. We're looking at ways to educate students in-house rather than outsourcing programming to intermediary districts where it might cost us more money to do so. So there's lots of efforts going into play that way. And I just want you to know that supporting House File 2657 is a support for all learners in Minnesota, not just those with special needs, but also those with those without special needs who have many of their programming options denied to them or reduced because of this cross subsidy. So really want to encourage everyone to take a look at your local school districts and the incredible programming that's happening from birth all the way through adulthood and the incredible importance of that. So with that, I just thank you for hearing this testimony today, and I urge you to support this House File 2657. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Superintendent. Appreciate your time. Next on the list, Superintendent Mike Funk, the superintendent of the Albert Lea Area Schools. Superintendent Funk, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I am Mike Funk, superintendent of the Albert Lea Area School District. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I've testified on this issue previously, pre-COVID. In Albert Lea, we have approximately 3,500 students. Our operating budget is just under $51 million. Our cross subsidy for special education in 2020 was $3.9 million. This year, thanks to the legislature, of that $3.9 million, we are receiving $72,000 to help reduce the cross subsidy from the additional aid we received from the legislature. 19.5% of our students receive special education services in Albert Lea. So, you know, when we talked about testifying about a week ago, we put our heads together here and we talked about, okay, if we were to eliminate this cross subsidy in Albert Lea, what are some things we could do? Well, as the superintendent here since 2009, I'm very sensitive to the needs of our community members and our taxpayers. And so the first thing we took a look at is our local operating levy. We receive about $2.2 million on an annual basis from our local taxpayers. We also have a component of that called local optional revenue, which is $724 per pupil. If we were to receive this additional $3.9 million, this would be an opportunity for our school board to provide tax relief out of the gates to our local taxpayers. In addition to that, we would still have significant additional funding available. And so there are things we could do as a school district. We are a one-to-one district, and you know, we are using COVID dollars to keep our technology plan in place. But we could use this additional funding to maintain our one-to-one plan and provide additional revenue for our technology. As everybody on this committee and in this this Zoom meeting is aware, our social emotional needs are exploding as a school district and throughout the state of Minnesota. We could hire more direct supports for our students and provide more opportunities for professional development for our teaching staff. 28% of our graduates in Albert Lee go directly into the workforce. We could maintain and improve our current CTE offerings to our students. It's very expensive to stay up to date on a lot of the technology we're utilizing within the manufacturing world. We could use some of this funding for that. A lot of districts are able to afford a four-period day for their high school students and provide more opportunities. We are not able to do that. A couple other quick things. We have a significant pre-K program here in Albert Lee. With this additional funding, it would provide us the opportunity to make it universal. We receive roughly $60,000 to $70,000 annually in gifted and talented aid. We could really improve our program there. And the final thing I'd like to mention is about 10% of our population is an English learning population. We have about a $700,000 cross subsidy there. We could take care of that cross subsidy with this additional funding if the special ed cross subsidy were to go away. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill and for listening to the needs of us throughout Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Funk, for joining us today. Last testifier I have on my list is Cherie Johnson, Executive Director of the Goodhue County Education District. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name is Cherie Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the Goodhue County Education District. I am here to support House File 2657, a bill to fully fund special education services. Providing special education services is the right thing to do, but funding it fully also is the right thing to do. Special education needs are rising. This increase is due to both increasing numbers of students and greater student needs. According to the December Child Count Report and annual accounting of students identified and receiving special education services, the number of students with special needs in Minnesota has grown to over 151,000. The COVID-19 pandemic and resulting recovery services are poised to exacerbate the cross-subsidy even further. How can our schools get relief? You, our legislators, hold the key. We ask you to support this bill to fully fund special education services. Fully funding special education benefits all students. If the general fund wasn't subsidizing special education costs, general fund dollars, as Mr. Funk pointed out, could be used to lower class sizes, bridge the way for inequity programs, and add support for needed mental health services and technology. Governor Dayton in 2012 and Governor Walz in 2019 both formed school finance working groups tasked with developing recommendations for you that would improve the adequacy, stability, and equity of Minnesota's education funding systems. In both reports, special education cross-subsidy was highlighted. Although some relief has been provided since those reports, the bill before you finally moves us toward fully funding special education services. My school districts are situated just south of the metro area and include Cannon Falls, Goodhue, Kenyawanamingo, Lake City, Red Wing, and Zimbrota-Mazeppa. While the cross-subsidy totals for my six member districts are smaller than in the metro area, the scale of the cross-subsidy is similar to that of their metro counterparts. Cross-subsidies for my districts range from around $300,000 for Goodhue, with a student enrollment of just 700 students, to $3 million for Red Wing, with a student population of just under 3,000. The cross-subsidy, unfortunately, seems to parallel both operating referendums and far too often amounts similar to needed budget cuts. Some of my districts are currently deficit spending. The impact is felt first in the necessity of using our general education revenues, and then again when we are making cuts because we have little to no ability to reduce special education programming. Fully funding the cross-subsidy is the only solution. Cross-subsidy does not increase and decrease by the size of a district's enrollment or impact a district proportionally to its size. Goodhue, for instance, has had multiple students with significant disabilities open enroll into their district this school year. This resulted in Goodhue needing to increase Setting 3 programming. That is programming for some of our most at-risk students. Open enrollment is unpredictable, and a small district can see rapid fluctuations in special education costs because of it. So the question is, will your legislative work support high quality, equitable education for all of our students, or are we going to continue the status quo that we have? Please do not hesitate to reach out to myself or any of school districts that you serve if you have any questions or need any information. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received no requests from the public to testify. Questions from the committee members? Seeing none. Sorry, didn't see that, Representative Thompson. Please proceed.
Hey, real quick, I just wanted to make sure that this was on your radar. Every year we have parents who end up like having concerns about their children, especially Black boys in our school districts here, have concerns about their children being misdiagnosed, mishandled. Teachers saying they're difficult to deal with. So many times parents are not informed about the law and what options, you know, they just tend to have when it comes to your special education. Special education also in some districts have become a dump site for children with behavioral problems. Not only in this state, but throughout the United States, our Black young men have been misdiagnosed. And sometimes drug, these are sometimes drug with these ADHD pills. So I want to make sure that we understand that, like, well-meaning legislation sometimes hurts the community that needs it the most. But a lot of our young black scholars are being misdiagnosed with special education needs. Really, they got like a daddy ain't at home need, or and I'm sitting. All honesty, Chair and Representative, we have to actually look at how we're assessing our kids also. And so I'm all for supporting you and your efforts, but I want to make sure that we understand that when we talk about special education, sometimes special education harms young Black boys and turn them into, you know, the pipeline to prison needs product to go on the conveyor belt. And so some of our kids are being sized up in jumpsuits right now, as early as sixth grade. And I just want to make sure that, because if I don't say it, nobody will. And I just want to make sure that I'm here for that reason. Because somebody has to speak for our young scholars. I mean, yeah, they're our future. So I'm hoping that I'm making sense to everybody here, because I'm sure making a lot of sense to myself. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. The area of special education is complex, needless to say, and issues around over-identification of African-American males into special education is certainly part of that complexity. So thank you for raising it. Seeing no other member questions, Representative Wolgamont, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, once again for hearing this bill, for thoughtful consideration around how we can fund these mandates and make sure that our kids are getting the future they deserve. In closing, Mr. Chair, I want to ask you and the members of this committee to join me in just imagining the benefits for all of our students if we can fully fund the special education cross-subsidy. We would have lower class sizes. We could better address students' mental health needs. We could have more personalized learning options. We could increase innovative program opportunities. We could have better technology. We could do so much good for our students, for all of our students, if we put our money where our mandates are and step up and fully fund the special education cross-subsidy. Thank you very much for your consideration, Mr. Chair and members, and I urge your full support for this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. And with that, Representative Wolgamont renews his motion to lay over House File 2657 for possible inclusion or for further consideration at a later date. Thank you very much for bringing the bill forward. Representative Youakim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 2751 to be before the committee and to be laid over for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I so move.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Members of the committee and members of the public, we're looking to lay this bill over by 11:55 a.m. Representative Youakim, if you would please proceed in introducing your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 2751 regarding a legislative working group on special education tuition billing. The MDE report and Representative Wolgamott's bill touched on that a little bit. And then we also heard a discussion around this last year in House File 2357. That bill made adjustments to how charter schools could bill back the home public school district for special ed services, among other proposed changes. These bill backs can directly affect a school's special education subsidy, as we have seen in some of the numbers that MDE showed us in the earlier slides. After last year's hearing on tuition billing, the stakeholders met to discuss the best ways to address this complicated, very complicated topic. The general consensus was to form a working group to take a holistic approach to study the requirements and practices related to tuition billing for special education and general education services. Services that are provided to students on IEPs by a non-resident school district, cooperative, or other charter school. This group of legislators will be able to take a much deeper dive into the data as they would gather testimony from all stakeholders involved. I personally went through a similar experience just recently serving on a working group of legislators that tackled the salvage title issue and found the process extremely productive, especially when you have a strong chair like we did with Senator Jasinski kind of steering the conversation. With me today is Josh Donham, the Director of Government Relations for the Minneapolis Public Schools, who spearheaded the interim discussion among stakeholders. He can provide a little more detail on the proposal, as well as the parties who were involved in the discussion over the interim.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Mr. Donham, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Josh Donham, Minneapolis Public Schools. And thank you, Chair Youakim, for working with stakeholders during the interim to bring this bill forward. And I do want to thank Eugene Piccolo with the Association of Minnesota Charter Schools, Maren Holden with Legal Services Advocacy Project, and Valerie Dozeland with their intermediate schools for helping provide feedback on the language. And in the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I'm going to testify in support of the bill for a number of organizations, including Minneapolis Schools, Schools for Equity, MSBA, AMSD, MREA, MASA, the Intermediate Schools, St. Paul Schools, and the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. And I'll skip over the portion about House File 2357, which Representative Youakim just detailed. But that bill did prompt a number of groups to get together and bring forward this bill. And as background members, when a student open enrolls or attends a charter school and receives special education services, those unreimbursed special education costs are billed back to your local school districts. Your local districts do not receive any state, federal, or local aid for these students, but yet must still pay these tuition bills. The intersection of our state's school choice laws and special education billing laws creates a misalignment of who is determining service levels and cost and who is paying for those services. This misalignment often pits schools against schools and parents against parents. And I've had some very challenging conversations with parents who have asked me why they should continue to send their child to the Minneapolis Public Schools when there's a charter just down the road that spends more than $11,000 per pupil per year just for the facilities costs to serve students with special needs. Those unreimbursed facilities costs, as Mr. Farron detailed, are billed back to my district. I want to be clear that we believe that every student, whether being served in a local district or charter school, should receive the services spelled out in their individual education program. This bill would establish a process to work through this misalignment and ensure students receive the services they deserve. And I have a long history with this committee. I have a great deal of appreciation for the work that every member of this committee does. And if this bill does pass, I would encourage committee members on both sides of the aisle to consider serving on the working group. These issues impact districts and families across the state and should not be partisan. So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Downham. When the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received one request for public testimony. Mr. Shaver, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the policy director for Ed Allies. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2751 and want to thank Representative Joaquin for your leadership in putting this bill together. For more than 60 years in Minnesota, it has been the responsibility of the home district to provide for the special education of students with disabilities, which includes funding, even if that student attends school in another district. In order to understand the purpose of this law, you have to look at special education in Minnesota before 1957. Minnesota had allowed but not required special education courses going back to 1915, but 40 years later, special education was still only offered in 30 of 87 counties. Many children with disabilities either had no school to go to or were segregated and institutionalized and sent to learn far away from home because their resident districts did not have special education programming. By requiring every district to provide special education services or allowing a student to enroll somewhere else at the resident district's expense, in 1957, nearly 20 years before the federal IDEA law was passed, the Minnesota legislature guaranteed an education to all students near their home and turned children that society had traditionally discarded into students by saying to kids with the highest needs, you deserve an education no matter where you live and no matter your need. Open enrollment, public charter schools, and cooperatives created complex funding challenges for local education agencies since then. So Representative Joaquin's effort to untangle these challenges by looking at the entire billing reimbursement process and ecosystem by putting together a working group is the exact right path forward, because funding adequacy and equity is what every child, and especially children with disabilities, deserves. We want to see this working group be inclusive of all voices and perspectives, and in particular center kids with disabilities as well as parents and caregivers with disabilities. This will ensure that any decisions made by this working group will be in service of students. This cannot just be a dollars and cents conversation. Solving this challenge will not eliminate the special education cross subsidy. Special education is expensive. It's supposed to be. Students with disabilities are not a drain on budgets. They are an asset to our states. Finding a workable solution for all parties on this piece of the puzzle will make it possible for families to continue to find a learning environment that supports their child's needs, no matter where they live or what their disability is. And that will uphold the spirit of Minnesota's laws established more than 60 years ago. Thank you again for your leadership, Representative Joaquin. Thank you to the committee for your time, and thank you all for your public service.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Members, any questions for the author or the testifiers? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question would be for the author, Representative Joaquin. Does this bill, does it anticipate or consider the additional costs of special education on the cost side that we have because of our additional mandates that we have in the state above what the federal government requires of us? Or is it just looking at the revenue side of the equation?
Representative Joaquin?
Mr. Chair, sorry, gotta move my cat out of the way. She's being very annoying here. No, if you can look online, starting on line 1.20 and moving through 2.9, it really does focus in on cost considerations must include special education costs, general education costs, facility costs, and access fees charged by the cooperative to the non-member school district. So while we're really looking at the tuition billing aspect of it, those discussions still will be had. But this working group is mostly focused on looking at the bill backs and the tuition billing between charter schools, intermediate schools, and our public schools to make sure that the bills are fair and accurate, and really having that deeper dive on that discussion. So it may not go as far as you'd like, but it is a good start.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Joaquin. That's what I thought I read in it as well. I am working on a bill to do some of that. I know I talked about it last year, and would hope that that you, Representative Joachim, and Mr. Chair would be interested in that discussion as we bring it forward. I think we need to know what is the amount of costs that we are burdening onto the taxpayers of Minnesota, because we have these additional mandates in law. There just seems to be a collective effort to ignore them as we go forward, because we haven't had that type of inquiry. So I'll talk to you more about it, each of you offline. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Any other member questions at this time? Seeing none, Representative Joachim, any closing comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just want to thank members for your attention to this topic today, and echo what some of our testifiers have said about how important it is to meet kids where they're at, and that some kids just, it takes a little bit more to make sure that they can reach their full potential. I don't want us to lose sight of that and lose sight of our kids that we're educating. I believe that this working group is a venue for a productive conversation around the issue of tuition billing that could lead to a very comprehensive result. The outcomes could be one additional way that we can address a special education cross subsidy, but as others have said, it's not the only way. I would appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 2751 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, tomorrow, Thursday, we'll be receiving an overview of the governor's supplemental budget proposal from Commissioner Mueller, Commissioner of Education. Come with your green eye shades and sharp pencils for that discussion. With that, members, thank you for your time and attention today. We are adjourned.